Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planning and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Im, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
Hello.
Yeah, we're talking about a plethora.
Is that like a Canadian thing, or is that just a Daniel thing?
You know, I have no idea.
I have no idea. I've heard people say plethora, and I've heard people say plethora. You say tomato, I say tomato. Let's call it
resources. Yeah, I don't know.
Yes.
Anyway, so
let's get on to our process, and let's process some questions.
Yes. So let's talk about, let's continue on from where we were at on episode 459. And if you haven't listened to episode 459, be sure to go back and listen to that first, because this is part two of a talk that you gave to a group of denominational and network leaders about what we need to do today so that we have a plethora or a plethora of church planners 5 to 10 years from now. Now, for the context of our podcast, we're obviously contextualizing this to what churches can do to be church planting churches so that we have a plethora of churches and church planners in the next few years. But let's just kind of get on with it. We talked about investment number one and number two last time. And today, let's start with investment three, which is for every aging catalyst that's retiring, raise up two younger ones.
Right. So, you know, we were talking in a setting where, you know, these are denominational leaders of church planting. So they're going to be people who are older. There's not a lot of 24-year-old denominational leaders of church planting. Mm-hmm. Mostly could be older millennials, Gen Xers, or younger boomers. And so what I think is happening right now is there's been sort of a group of people who sort of carried the baton or are carrying the baton of church planting. And they're doing so well. I mean, if the people right now think of their network or denomination that they're in, there's probably somebody in their 40s or 50s that's kind of helping that church planting path move forward. Now, if you then think about, well, who's going to take that up? Let's say it's people in their 50s. You know, they're going to retire probably in their 60s. So my point is we need to start raising up a new generation that cares about systems and processes. And because the reality is church planting is not the same as church planting leadership. Oh, not at all.
Yeah, that's right.
And so how do we help people see it? Because, I mean, as you know, when you came, when we hired you kind of off the field, out of a local church, to go into this ministry of new churches, I mean, it's a different thing. You're not dealing with people every day. You're dealing with how you serve large groups of people. How do you convince churches to care about this or that? So the end result is it's a different kind of ministry. So if all the 27-year-olds kind of think that's, you know, kind of a waste of time and not helpful and whatever, I'm not saying they would, but we have to say, we have to help some people raise up a new generation of people who are interested in what it means to look like to lead a movement focused on church planting.
And when you think about that from a local church perspective, how do then our local churches work with their denominational or their network leaders involved in church planting? Sitting at the tables that we sit at, I mean, how many of our denominational and network church planting leaders would just salivate at the thought of 5 to 10 churches knocking on their door and saying, hey, we want to be a church planting church. Help us.
Totally. So how do you change your life? I mean, I got to tell you, I would say, I was talking to, this sounds like a name drop, forgive me, but we just had Rick Warren in last year at a summit we did, the GC2 summit. And we were joking backstage, and because I told him, you know, he kind of ruined my life. And he knows that. So it's an old joke that we have. So whenever I ask him to do something, I say, remember, you ruined my life. But I was pastoring a local church. I get this call from Rick Warren, and he says, hey, we want you to kind of be in this joint partnership we had. And it wasn't well aligned. It was, you know, Saddleback was engaged, and the other partner wasn't as aligned with where Saddleback was. So anyway, so I left the local church. And boy, that first two things. First, that's a huge transition in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And second, I ended up in an unhealthy situation. And the end result is that my departure from local church, Don and I were like, oh my gosh, I miss pastoring, and I still miss pastoring a lot. And matter of fact, when you ask me someday on a Friday, see, pastors, they're tired on a Monday. On a Friday, I'm like, I'm going to go pastor. You know, and that's how I get to preach and teach, and I do those things. But the point being is that many times a network leader or denominational leader of church planning has a shelf life of 2 to 3 years because that person steps into the role and then thinks, oh my gosh, I'm not winning people to Jesus directly. I'm not raising up leaders directly. Now I'm a coalition builder. I'm trying to get established churches to do something. I'm trying to protect the church planters from the established churches that are mad because the church planters said something too aggressively or you know, was too dismissive of the established church. And it's like, what have I done? And I got to tell you, I have said, what have I done on more than one occasion. however, you know, that's part of the job is who's going to stand up for the church planters. Now, that's not always easy. You know, I ended up with a 2007, a motion to investigate me on the floor of my own denomination because I was standing up for some church planters. So what does that mean? It means somebody has to say, I'm going to lead that role. Now, here's the thing. A little Star Trek reference. We should have more Star Trek references, but remember Captain Kirk? I'm sure you remember Captain Kirk. So Captain Kirk was promoted to Admiral, and he said to, I think it was Captain Picard in this crossover episode, said, don't let them promote you out of that chair. See, the reality is some people are just temperamentally unfit to be an organizational leader, but they might make a great serial church planter that plants over and over again. But that's, I just think we need to start thinking about that and start finding some people to plug in to those leadership roles. And the example I gave, the example I gave was that it's like a rat in the snake right now. We've got a big bump of late 40s to maybe even early 60s who leaders who are really influenced by that Fuller Seminary conversation when Fuller was kind of at a different place, really focused on church planting and evangelism, church growth even. And that kind of rat in the snake is moving through near the end and is soon going to be, how do I put that, out. And so we need some new leaders to be raised up, not just all of a sudden, 10 years, everyone in church planning who's church planning leadership is gone.
That's great. That's great. And for those next generation of denominational leaders to be catalysts, right? Not just to be maintainers, but to kickstart and to even increase the fervor around developing leaders and church planting leaders and empowering churches to plant churches and to know how to work collaboratively. So yes, denominational leadership isn't for everyone, and it's not something that you do just to climb the ladder. There definitely is a unique set of skills. And perhaps you have that. So if you do, then definitely talk to those in your denomination and talk through the implications of that. But for everyone else, let's continue to plant churches. Let's continue to raise up church planters. Jesus said that the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few, and to pray to the Lord of the harvest. So let's continue to do that. So that's investment number three. The fourth investment is to not just widen existing pipelines, but also to diversify your platforms. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So one of the things I think happens is that we think of church planting, and sometimes we think of church planting the way that we have done church planting. So all of my church planting has been, well, all except the first, has been more of the large launch sort of, you know, I didn't have any seminary training or anything of that sort. By the time I got to my second one, I was a seminary grad. So that's been most of my experience, which I'm for. We want more of that, not less of that. That's a pipeline. So we need to expand that pipeline of kind of the typical, I mean, I was younger then, I was a young man who was passionate, enthusiastic about trying something because I was entrepreneurial and et cetera, et cetera. So that's great. That's good. We need more, maybe not more Ed Stetzers, but more people like that. However, there's a whole lot of other places and spaces that we can draw church planters from. And if we want a movement, we need people who, you know, I said my first church plant, I was a contractor doing work on rehabbing houses. But I left that and I eventually became full-time and stayed full-time. So what about people who don't? What about those contractors who could still plant a church on the weekend? I did it and others can do it. What about business leaders? You know, what about, I was just talking to Charlie Dates is a pastor here in Chicago, and he's texting me about a local pastor. We're getting him to write something. He's a fascinating, fascinating person. So, but his name is Bishop Horace Smith. And so he's like the head of, I forget what form of medicine is, pediatric medicine at a local hospital and the pastor of a megachurch. So, you know, I think that we can open up new platforms, diversifying that by having bivocational people. Let's reach and involve people of different ethnic backgrounds and different languages and different ways that things look. Let's be in favor of micro church and, you know, house church and simple church and all these other approaches to church. So what I would say is, I think right now, I think what we often think is we got to, let's take the pipeline that Ed Stetzer came down. We want to widen that. But here's the thing. I mean, I raised support the second church plan. By the time I got to that, after that, I mean, you get to the place where you're funded. And so, but we can't fund all the seminary grads who might be interested in church planning. So we've got to diversify those platforms if we're going to see a movement.
Yeah. So the whole idea around pipeline thinking is this idea of, hey, just recruiting people to join your existing track, that one lane track, and the platform idea, the platform thinking is, what are those different spaces where individuals can get involved in church planting? So when you think about even today and the different ways that church planting is happening, Brian Sanders is a great example. He continues to grow in awareness and popularity in the sense of what he's doing with micro churches and the way he's actually been able to facilitate that movement a little bit like house churches, but it's a different lane. It's a different way to do that. Even when you think about university-based planting as well, or marketplace missions, or there's a lot of different ways that church planting can happen. So, and that's why the whole bivocational, co-vocational conversation is so important, because we can't just let, even if you look at David Garrison and movements and church planting movements, we can't let funding and education be the limiting factor, because if that's what it is, we're never going to get to move mental energy.
I agree. And I think, you know, the thing is, it's tricky to like walk and chew gum at the same time. And you've got to continue to enlarge existing platforms. I think it's great that people are interested, that people who are who have masters in divinities or whatever are interested in masters. I said masters of divinities is only one. Anyway, they have seminary degrees, that they do
master
that.
Master of God.
Exactly. but we need a lot of other kinds. And if we have a lot of other kinds, I think we'll set a broad table. And in doing so, church planting will thrive more effectively.
Yeah, perfect. All right. And the last investment is to think and act like a prayer movement.
Yeah. Well, I think anytime you see a movement, and you know, this is, I don't know about you, and I'll just confess that sometimes prayer is perfunctory. You know, it's just something that we do, you know, and it's not, you know, we might pray for a meeting or whatever it must be. So if you have a perfunctory kind of prayer, that's not going to do it. But there seems to be around the world a move. When you see a movement, it's not perfunctory prayer. It is passionate prayer. I didn't intend to make those two P's, but nevertheless, there it is.
You're a preacher.
What we see is and we see, like, if we look at First Great Awakening, Second Great Awakening, we see prayer movements starting before that. If we, you know, when we see church planting movements, David Garrison's research, we find that comes from birth from a deep spirit and passion for prayer. And so all these things over and over again point to the passion of prayer that precedes, wow, I'm alliterating with it, I'm trying, that precedes movements and really does. So I think we have to look and to think and say, all right, how are we calling out to God for him to supernaturally intervene, for him to be at work in the life of these churches that are planted, that more are planted, that more are planted, and more are planted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Moravian Church is definitely a popular example of how prayer, of how intense a people group of a movement was. Really, their ministry was birthed and fueled by prayer. What were those points that you were referencing in that talk around the Moravian Church?
Yeah. Of course. I mean, and lots of, you know, we use the Moravian example, lots of examples. But they're such a powerful example. Mm-hmm. And what you find is that when you see people who are going to take that passion for prayer and sort of apply it to, all right, we really want to see this impacting ultimately our mission. And that's where the Moravians come in. I quoted from Bishop Clarence Shaw on the Spirit of the Moravian Church. They talked about simplicity of theology and doctrine, happiness as the natural response to God's gift of salvation, unintrusiveness as they celebrated all churches and avoided sheep stealing, fellowship based upon those heart relationships, and the idea of service as a heart attitude towards roles in the church, but especially in service to the world. So the Moravians become these incredible mission machine as they just kind of loved Jesus deeply, prayed, and were sent out for the cause of the gospel. Boy, we could use a Moravian-like movement again today.
Yeah, I mean, just even if we were to, even if every church in our cities would say, hey, as it relates to reaching our city, what would it look like if we came to the table with other churches from different denominations and networks? What if, what would it look like if we were to come together to the same table and have simplicity of theology and doctrine, happiness as the natural response to God's gift of salvation, and that was the ethos and the attitude that we had toward one another. We avoided sheep stealing. We had fellowship based on heart relationships, and we were able to bridge across those social divides in our city. And we all had this attitude towards service, service and serving our city and reaching our city. I mean, imagine the collaboration and the kingdom movement that would happen in our cities if we just adopted a little bit more of the spirit of the Moravian church in each of our churches in inner city.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's true, but it does. I mean, the point it kind of comes back to, I mean, the Moravians were a prayer movement, a prayer function and focus movement. And so when you see that, we have to ask the question, what can or should we be doing? Well, perhaps a big part of that is to be a people who call out to God for him to sovereignly work. And because, you know, the first Great Awakening, they didn't see themselves as doing anything to create it. God just brought it. And so may we call out to him and say, Lord, we need that kind of revival today as well.
Amen. Amen. Well, thanks again for listening into the New Church's Q&A podcast. If you haven't yet left a question, just go to speakpipe.com/newchurches on your mobile device. Or if you're on your computer, just go to newchurches.com, hit the sidebar on the right, and send any question that you might have on church planting, multi-site multiplication, leadership, church-related issues. Just send that in, and Ed and I, or Todd and I, would love to answer that question on our next episode. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time.